Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. February 25th, 2021. My new article on LinkedIn: the Purim holiday, the emergence of a renewed world. Every new state is born only under the condition that the former state completely exhausts itself. The holiday of Purim symbolizes the turning point the world is immersed in now as a result of the pandemic. Thus, this year's celebration is particularly meaningful, not only to the Jewish people, but to all of humanity. The events described in the Purim story are hints at the corrections the world needs to go through. The global virus outbreak has marked a deep transformation in all levels of our lives. It makes evident how interdependent we are and the pressing need to change our selfish attitudes and more considerate behavior toward others, that is, a shift from our egoistic approach to a more altruistic outlook. It will help us close the gaps between us, and will unleash a positive common field, a unified and integral reality. And in order to achieve this goal, the people of Israel can play a pivotal role. Haman represents today's divisive mindset we need to tackle, the social division caused by the desire to seek money, honor, control or power in spite of everyone and everything. This shuts us off from each other, separates and harms us. Today's tumultuous social atmosphere is a calling for us to seek our common voice as a humanity that shares common values and purpose. If we use this calling to connect, we can create a much more peaceful and friendly society for us all. The traditional reading of the Megillat Esther, Scroll of Esther, during this celebration describes a time in ancient Persia when Jews found themselves under existential threat. The leader who inspired these persecutions was the personal assistant of King Ahasuerus, Haman. Haman knew that the Jews were in a state of division and that this weakness would enable him to eradicate them. As it is written, there are certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the peoples, Esther 3:8. Haman said that in his view, the Jews could be destroyed because they were separated from one another. However, Mordechai, the hero of the Purim tale, worked to bridge the Jews' division, which is what eventually saved their lives. The Jews gathered themselves together to stand for their life, Esther 8:11. The moment they began to get closer to each other, a great force appeared among them. They began to feel their upper goal, they became confident, had power, and managed to destroy their enemies and rid themselves of all their troubles. Haman represents today's divisive mindset we need to tackle, the social division caused by the desire to seek money, honor, control or power in spite of everyone and everything. This shuts us off from each other, separates and harms us. Today's tumultuous social atmosphere is a calling for us to seek our common voice as a humanity that shares common values and purpose. If we use this calling to connect, we can create a much more peaceful and friendly society for us all. Whenever the Jewish people were at risk of ruin, unity proved to be the only possible means to be saved. We can use the example of the Purim story as an eternal reminder that our cohesion can extricate us from the worst situations, and that by uniting, we set a constructive and positive example for the rest of humanity. The Jewish nation has an innate commitment to set the standard for choosing unity over separation, but this call is for humanity as a whole to make the same strides toward unification before heading into greater turmoil and crises. Our good destiny depends on us, on the choice we make. Happy Purim to all. My new article on LinkedIn: the hypocrisy of sex scandals. Every once in a while, and today more often than before, a sex scandal explodes in the media and everyone is shocked to hear that this or that celebrity, who used to be a role model we all grew up on and admired, is really a monster in disguise. When this happens, moralists click their tongues in disapproval, and quickly turn to social media to express their righteous indignation and disbelief that this person, the idol of our youth, was actually a sex predator, a villain of the worst kind. When we talk about climate change, pandemics, power outages, or even a traffic jam, we don't realize that these are manifestations of our connectedness. The only reason they are here is that we are unaware that our thoughtless and careless attitude to one another causes them. I think they're hypocritical. First, when such a scandal blows up, you will always find people who knew about it but kept silent, or would have known all about it had they not tried so hard not to see the obvious. Second, there is nothing new about this phenomenon. Sex perversions have been an inseparable part of human perversions throughout the ages. In ancient cultures, such as in Egypt, Greece, or Rome, some perversions were permitted and acceptable, and others were regarded as an abomination. In more Puritan times, such as the Middle Ages, one could find oneself tied to the stake for having done the same thing others did in antiquity, without anyone making a fuss over it. It is not that the condemning Puritans did not commit the same crimes they had accused others of committing, it's just that they hid it better, and were mainly better connected to the authorities in charge of exposing such immoral behaviors. The truth about these scandals is not that such misdemeanors are burgeoning, but that they are used more often than before against their perpetrators. In other words, today, accusations of sexual misconduct are a weapon that politicians use in order to destroy their rivals. Exposing sex crimes will not prevent the next crime or make potential victims safer. It will, however, affect the accused, even if the accusation turns out to be false. Therefore, the next time a sex scandal breaks out, check who benefits from its exposure. If we want to prevent sex crimes, we needn't focus on punishment, but on educating the public. I'm not saying we should not punish sex offenders, I am merely pointing out that if we want to prevent such crimes, the way to do it is not by intimidation but by education to consideration. We are brought up in a social environment that teaches us nothing but to focus on our own wants and needs, and ignore those of others. With such a narcissistic upbringing, people are bound to be inconsiderate and apathetic to other people's suffering. They will not cringe at the thought of hurting other people. But the truth is that such behaviors hurt the offender too, and not only the victim. In truth, we are connected and dependent on each other even if we aren't aware of it. We could become aware of it, we could know how to conduct ourselves in a way that's satisfying to us, and to everyone around us, but we must first be taught to see ourselves within the bigger picture of humanity. When we talk about climate change, pandemics, power outages, or even a traffic jam, we don't realize that these are manifestations of our connectedness. The only reason they are here is that we are unaware that our thoughtless and careless attitude to one another causes them. If we were educated about our interconnections, we would know how to conduct ourselves so as not to inflict pandemics on ourselves. Moreover, there would be countless benefits to such awareness. We wouldn't hurt each other since we would feel, not just intellectually, but truly feel it in our hearts that we are all connected. And just as I wouldn't hurt myself, I wouldn't hurt anyone else. Can you imagine how living in such a society would feel? We wouldn't have to worry about sex crimes, or any crime, for that matter, since people wouldn't dream of hurting other people, they would feel connected. It turns out that the true knowledge we all need is not the next tech gadget, but the awareness that we are all connected and affect each other in myriad ways. If we knew this and lived by this awareness, we would treat each other humanely, the way human beings should treat other human beings, and there would be no scandals of any kind. Michael Leitman, on Quora. What are the defining characteristics of being Jewish? Anyone who agrees with rising above the egoistic human nature in order to positively connect with other people, according to the phrase love your friend as yourself, is considered a Jew, which comes from the word for unity, Yehud. It is not a matter of having Jewish ancestry in the physical and biological sense, but everybody, all humanity, will eventually have to reach such a state. In other words, everybody will reach a state of unification above the divisive ego, As it is written, that then the land of Israel will spread to the entire world, which means that all people in the world will live according to the tenet, love your friend as yourself. I am certain that we will reach this state. The only questions are when and how we will aid it to come about. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. New Life 1298. Creating Connection in a Team.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Leitman. Hello, Dr. Leitman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza Mazoz. Hello. And today, we'd like to talk about how can we bring the spirit of connection to whatever environment we're in. Be with us, Nitza, please.
Yeah,
we're in a course of integral education, and we're going through different processes, and we understand the importance of connection in life. We understand the connection is actually the means by which we can achieve the goals that we set to achieve as a group. And today we'd like to take a step forward, and we're bringing to the studio a story of one of the participants. He himself is a doctor. He's a part of a medical team in the Corona Intensive Care Department. And after he went through this process here on this course, he's really interested in bringing a similar process, taking the medical team through this process of connection to bring this kind of spirit into their medical team. I'll just explain what's going on there right now. We see it many times on TV, but he's living it every day. Lots of tension, pressure, even though that we're talking about a team of doctors and nurses and medical caretakers that are working under lots of pressure and for a long period of time. And they're all dressed up in these, you know, suits, which doesn't even allow them to see the facial expressions of their coworkers. There's something very non-simple about their day-to-day work. And alongside with this, they're saving lives every moment. This is what they're doing. And therefore, when he took this course, he really felt that he wants to pass these things on, and therefore he took to the department manager that was really excited about it. You know, especially after all the different states that we've experienced and there are different dramas and tragedies, because there's insufficient connection in the team, even though that usually they work in cooperation, teamwork, and so on. So, together with you, we'd like to begin this process. This doctor who took our course got permission from his manager and from his boss, and they have team meetings every time, and the upcoming team meeting, he wants to talk about this to the team itself, and he's contemplating how to begin the process. What is the first thing that he actually has to tell the team? And how to create some kind of warmth, initial warmth, that will allow him to start opening their hearts a bit more. What would you recommend them to do, first and foremost? I'm perplexed. Because I know doctors. My parents are doctors. I started studying medicine in the university, and I very quickly left the profession. I understood that it's not for me. I don't know what to talk to them about, because what can I talk to this team about? That we're dealing with life. They know what's death. They know too, externally wise. To get deeper into it, I don't know even know how, because it's to bring them the importance of what they're doing, of what they're engaged in, I'm afraid that my words will... They'll feel that, who's this guy that's come talk to us about this, that day in, day out, they're dealing with life and death situations, feeling that they're either superior or helpless in regard to people. I don't know. I don't think about it. And what am I supposed to talk about? I mean, to try and bring them to a stronger connection inside their team, to tell them that in their connection, as they turn to each and every patient, that this is what the fate of that patient and their spiritual fate also depend on. For the patient, it's their corporeal destiny and fate, and for them, it's their spiritual one. Maybe just ask, and I'll somehow try to, through short questions and answers, we'll find a way. Okay. This came up due to a case, tragic case, that happened in one of the hospitals, that actually he brought all the medical teams, it brought all the medical teams to talk about it. How do we make sure that it doesn't happen again and so on? Because there's always the professional teams that they examine, are we doing things right or wrong, are there enough beds, enough doctors, enough this, enough that. These are technical things. I'm talking about a person's ability. How can every person bring their good side, their best possible abilities into such a team that is working every day in saving lives? Because we're working so hard and there's already a growing fatigue, how to empower this team, to give them the ability to empower others? We know that when there's power in a group, everyone suddenly feels uplifted, even though that previously were exhausted. So can we start from this place of how do we arrange a new level of connection between us, something that we didn't have before? It's not simply cold cooperation, but something warmer. We have to also remember that the student that we're representing in the studio, he himself is a doctor, and he wants to talk to his friends in the team. It's not strangers, you know, he didn't land from the sky. He's one of them. They're working together for many years, and he simply feels that it's possible to improve. It's not, they are working in cooperation and everything, especially in these teams, you know, with cooperation, it's clear what will happen. But he feels that the connection that he's studying about here on our course is something more advanced, and this is where he wants to take them. Precisely because I'm familiar with doctors, it's so hard for me to start to talk to them about what? About the soul? Or about how much their force of connection can help them in a team? They work in a team, they feel it. Where will they get the strength to do it from, the fuel to connect to a strong team? What will be their motivation? Where will they get the fuel from? It's not from the faith of believing in some exalted matters, but where will they take the strength from to be in a more interconnected team, to work in overcoming their fatigue and their exhaustion? What will be their motivation? If they're not expecting some kind of upper payment, some kind of reward from above, then I don't know. Look, that doctor that studied with us, he learned that Development is going in the direction of deeper and stronger integration. He understood this idea. He wants to advance this team, to take them one or two steps forward. It's clear to him and to everyone else working on this team, and of course in these kinds of fields, that if they'll be more connected, everything will work out better, less pressure, more success. In short, it's a team that you don't have to convince them why to be, why is it that being more connected is better. Here you see the reward on the spot, there and then, in terms of saving lives and their personal feeling. Now, let's simply take the first step. In your opinion, what should be the first action that he can take in order to some extent increase the level of their connection from ordinary cooperation to a bit more connection? What's the difference between cooperation and the feeling that we're connected? So again, what's the reward? The reward is that they'll have less pressure, less stress at work, less distress that each of them will feel. We know that doctors are a high-risk group themselves, you know, because of all the pressure they commit there. It's double the number of, you know, those that commit suicide in society in general. So immediately we get something from this, less stress. So I'm repeating the question. The first question is, what's the difference between ordinary cooperation and a state of interconnection between people, by definition? Ordinary cooperation, it's like a machine. That all parts, all the parts of the machine are properly working in a professional way, out of good understanding that we're all interdependent and that we really have to do the work like an engine, where there are many parts that move together, but move together in a good, nice way, correctly, properly connected. But that's an engine. That's the still level. If you're already talking about bring people into this common work, and you want to give them a special drive, pressure and interest and excitement and inspiration, specifically from the common work, then here you have to bring them already the strength, the force, the attraction, the pull and push to participate mutually with one another, that everyone wants, not formally, but that they're really interested, very much interested in cooperating with others, doing their work, and the maximum possible connection between them emotionally and professionally with all the team members. But the question is, that these efforts, they require lots of energy. What kind of energy? Inner energy, especially. Inner human energy, where he's looking for how can he help the friends, and the friends, how can they help him? If they're all working in a state where they all feel each other, even before the actions, where each and every action is felt, and then it's no longer that they professionally understand what each of them needs to do. But, you know, with this inner urge, where can they take the energy for it from? Wait. Before that, this is something that I'd like to ask about. You said that they can feel each other and know, even without words, what should be the next action. Of course, but it also has to do with the profession itself. If they're professionals, they understand it. But we're talking about an even more inclination, which is what? That it's not something mechanical. I gave you an engine as an example where all the parts work flawlessly. No one's late and no one does anything needless. But here there's an emotional participation, goal-oriented participation of all the team members to complete the others, meaning that each of them would like to also be instead of the other and to do all the work. And the same way, each and everyone, this means in participation, in cooperation. Otherwise, it's just a group of professionals. Now, when you talked about connection, I felt that each of them has to complete the others. If I'm a part of the team, how am I supposed to complete the others? And my desire to complete the work of my friends and the team, to complete our work for the work to be perfect. And I don't really have the words, but it's not that we're doing it. It's an emotion and feeling our connection as one, that we have to feel that we're actually a single mechanism, that there's this mechanism, a system, in which all of us are together, and each of us, because of this one mechanism, is right now performing their action. But it's not that each of them works in their own time and according to however they feel like, but they, you know, according to what's necessary, but they're working due or because of that one mechanism. So each part, each person in the team is working toward the entire, yes, on part of the team and for the team. Okay, so it's not one-on-one, but each with the entire team. And what strength does he give the team by putting in his share, his effort? What force? He's giving his heart. Where possible, he would be willing to complete the entire work instead of the team. But he's doing his part because this is what he was given to do. And it's forbidden for him to do more than that, but only his part. Otherwise, both in lack and in, you know, he'll simply confuse everyone. You said that were it possible, he'd do everything instead of all of them. Yes, this is something that all of them have to feel. This is a feeling of connection between people. Yeah, one for all and all for one. Okay, this is a very emotional picture of a very deep mutual connection. Where possible, I do everything instead of them. I understand that that's called connection in a team. It's connection because in this desire he exists, by this desire he exists in each one of them, and all of them together exist in their common general desire. And through this effort, they build the groups, they build their virtual connection that's dwelling upon them from above, making the concept of the one out of them. This concept of a group, if each relates this way to the rest of the team, there's a new entity that's created called group? Yes. What is this entity, emotionally, intellectually? This entity, when we're talking about one, it's above them, it encompasses them, hugs them, embraces them, and this entity starts giving each of them one feeling, that they're like one man and one heart, that this is what they are. Suppose we'll advance toward that a bit in our team. You, I, Nitsa, will each of us feel additional forces? First of all, you feel additional forces, and besides, in that you will feel an additional special upper force because you're trying to be as one. And the one, unique and unified, this is a force that exists in all of nature, in the entire universe, in all the worlds, everywhere, that precisely, if we suit ourselves to it, to become like this force, then by that, we receive this force, and this way we can take care of a patient, then by it we can take care of a patient. And we will really feel a great benefit both in our work and the treatment and the forces that we have, the understanding that we acquire and success. You said that everyone has to feel that were it possible, they'd be willing to replace everyone, do everything instead of everyone. Isn't it a kind of pressuring feeling? It's a burden. No. By connecting that way between them, amongst them, each of them suddenly feels that they have superpowers. They feel no fatigue. They start seeing their work as one work, as one job, one work that is filled with upper content, because they're connecting to become one. But here you have the pandemic and the situation and everything else. This is only the external reason to the concept of the one that they can shape here. If in such a group, suddenly there's a conflict. Actually, it can't be, but suppose. How are they supposed to relate to this conflict in their relationship? They immediately rise above the conflict to become one again. What do they have to do? First step. Something happened, an explosion. They have to complete each other. How? Very simple. Suppose something happens. They immediately cover this malfunction of theirs, their attitude toward each other, in a way that they all want to cover it. Love covers all crimes. What do they do with their bad blood that's running between them now? Suppose we made a mistake. It was a tragic mistake. And I feel that it was Nitsa's fault. Nitsa feels that it's my fault. And there's an explosion and the entire team is drawn into this drama and it shatters our relationships. How do we cover all that step by step? We have a bad relationship now. First step is that for a few minutes we have to talk about it, that what's happening isn't because of us, none of us are to blame, not even Nitsa. But all of us are covering this malfunction between us because we don't see it as our own malfunction, but as something that's truly caused from above, from that one force that we wanted to attain. Then that one force is showing us now how much we're not one yet, and we have to overcome that malfunction by an even stronger, better connection. And then we become an even more united team. Connecting to this one greater force that connects us, reaching even greater achievements. And when we'll come to that, maybe something else will be revealed and something else, each time some new malfunction. But we start seeing that these malfunctions are actually causing us stronger connection, to connect with each other more strongly. So this is why we're giving these malfunctions, and then we see them as necessary things along the way above which we can be in an ever-growing connection. Suddenly I feel how every day that I come to this team, that I come to work, it's like starting your engine, starting a car. What's the first thing that I do when I come to my team in the morning to restart our connection, to work as one body? It's like starting an engine.
So
you turn it, and we shift it from still to something that's working. So that's what we have to do. We have to create some kind of connection. Maybe sing a bit, talk a bit. Doctors have a few minutes before work. They have this kind of gathering, and this way we have to do it. And to remind all of us, what are we doing? What do we want to do? How does each of us advance and all of us together upon this hard work? Meaning we have to start the engine every day in order to connect to the team, and all day long work as one team. And then our work, if I understand properly, is every time, even if we feel that our spirits are deteriorating, we have to start it anew to warm things up every time. This is actually our constant work.
Yeah.
About this new entity that's made called the group. There are many groups in the world. If I properly understand what's unique about it, is the special kind of integration between everyone in this team. Everyone starts feeling that they're attaining this integration. They won't want to leave this group. Precisely in this team, they're starting to feel that here, there's the concept of the one, that we're all connecting as one, and this is truly a great benefit. You said that in this group, they won't only start feeling additional forces and everything above the fatigue and so on, but they'll feel that there's some kind of integral force that comes and turns them into one entity. It's the general force of nature. Yeah. So the small integration in their team creates a kind of compatibility with the great integration that is. What do you think that this entire global pandemic is for? What? For us to finally reach that. That we're all a part of one team. They're taking care of one patient, which is us, all of humanity, and for us to rise above him to the concept of the one. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. What do? We do. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
When corporeal pleasures suck us in. Question: how can we feel the Creator's control over the entire creation? What can we do about corporeal hobbies that suck us in? Answer: the desires for corporeal pleasures do not disappear. It is said that since the destruction of the temple, only Kabbalists have the desire for corporeal pleasures. A person who reaches the wisdom of Kabbalah is swallowed by the method of study at first and is caught up by it, but after a while all this disappears and one is drawn in different directions. This is where the spiritual work begins. A person needs to understand that this is how one is drawn to develop spiritually, and that now you must constantly keep your goal in front of yourself, find out how to increase your spiritual advancement, how to get closer to the goal, and how not to be distracted by other things. If you are distracted, it should be only for a short time, and then you should immediately return to the spiritual path again. Like a person who must eat, but does not stretch it out for 2 or 3 hours. Or, for example, feels that he needs to do a little exercise, so he runs for 15-20 minutes and will immediately return to his spiritual work. It is the same with all his other engagements. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 9, 2018. The power of music. Question: psychologists have one common point for all problems: pure music, without words. Music is a remedy from stress, from pain, from depression. What is there in music that heals and cleanses and raises? Answer: music affects the ear. This is the most sensual thing in a person, not smell, not touch, not taste, but hearing. When harmony is properly tuned, it affects you almost immediately. A few beats, and a person is already in it. Music is able to lift and lull and heal. But these are all such small, weak, earthly means. Do not be seduced by this, because the fact is that it depends on the preparation of a person, on his upbringing. He must understand this music. The Papuans will not understand Bach. And the classics will not understand contemporary music. But no matter what kind of music it is still a very strong accompaniment to the entire history of mankind, because it is at the level of Bina, and this is the sense of hearing. Music is very powerful. From Cab TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, January 18, 2021. Spiritual and corporeal significance of dreams. Dreaming involves serious work on the part of our brain. It processes and stores all available information accumulated over a day or several days. The information is then allocated and stored in the archive of our minds. During this process, many random connections take place, so dreams frequently appear illusory. In fact, during our dream state, serious decisions and actions take place. The mind works very intensively, but on a deep, inner level, which we have not yet explored. When this information has been stored and internally processed on the subconscious level, a person is ready to awaken. We always see dreams. They constantly appear before us, for these processes are erratic inside our minds. A person is now ready for the next day, for the following correct perception of information based on the previous day and the dream that he experienced, that is, for a re-evaluation of the information that occurred during sleep. Therefore, dreams, while disconnecting you from reality, allow you to correctly reset yourself and arrive at a new state with a different take on reality. It is the same in spirituality, since our world is a reflection of the spiritual world. In spirituality, without falling asleep or disconnecting from reality like in our world, we consciously raise ourselves to the next level as if to the next day. Having broken away from the previous degree and not yet risen to the next one, we remain between them and wish to consciously transition from one to the other. This is the night between 2 days. Between two realities, we can feel such states that we are not internally ready for. We can feel what is not yet part of our understanding and see things that we are seemingly not supposed to see yet. We are still not ready for them. Therefore, dreams are a very special, beautiful state from which you can draw far-reaching conclusions and find new aspirations. From Cab TV's The Power of the Book of Zohar, number 5. How to draw the upper light. Question: how can corporeal egoistic actions like studying, for example, extract the absolutely heavenly spiritual force of bestowal from the upper world? Answer, indeed, if our world is not connected to the upper world in any way, how can I do something through my physical actions, through my egoism? The point is there is nothing I can do. However, we have been given the opportunity to gather in tens and try to unite between us, despite our egoism, above it. And although I cannot do that at all, to the extent that I try to connect with the friends, I invoke the upper light unto me. That is, there is a so-called branch to root connection, and I can do it. If I behave in a certain way with the friends in the group and we study Kabbalistic sources together, create connections between us, and imitate the images and actions Kabbalah writes about, then even if I am in my egoism, I still feel an internal inspiration to summon the impact of the upper surrounding light unto me. This light surrounds the ego on purpose, and to the extent that the ego yearns for it and seemingly wants to resemble it, the light impacts the ego and changes it. From Kab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 23, 2018. How to overcome shame. Comment: on the second Israeli TV channel there was a story about a charity canteen that opened in Tel Aviv. The number of their clients increased by almost 70%. These are new people who come there for a free lunch. And these people feel very uncomfortable. They are the former waiters, former LAL flight attendants, a real mix of different kinds of people. There are a lot of young people, boys and girls. They do not look up so as not to see each other. They come up, get lunch, and carefully ask, "How much does it cost?" They learn that it costs nothing and step aside. The feeling of shame was conveyed very strongly. My response: shame is the most burning feeling. Stronger than any pain. Even sometimes stronger than death. Question: do you need to rise above this feeling when you go to such a place? Answer: the point is that either you want to justify this feeling of shame, "I don't care, everything is so, and I am like that," and so on. That is, you can somehow chat about it at the everyday level, at the level of our world. But, in principle, this is the most terrible feeling. Because the feeling of shame is actually a feeling of annulling a person in you. That is, you are really nothing and nobody. We do not even understand to what extent we must remove what is called I from ourselves and leave only the animal shell from this. And the animal is not ashamed. It is, of course, very difficult. And I do not think that humanity will correct itself based on this, although this is the most serious level of correction. I think that after all, we will reveal the path of light to people and not the path of suffering. Question: is this the path of real suffering? Answer: this is the path of real suffering, because in fact, if a person is brought to a very serious feeling of shame, he will only pray to die. Why did I live to see this? I would like to just cease to exist. Question: what do we do with this state? Answer: we only need to reveal our purpose, that this is the highest governance. The system is so arranged and it causes such feelings of shame in us, so that we rise above our I, so they would not annul it, but rise above it. Question: can you say how to rise above my I, which cries out, "is ashamed," as it is said, "death is better than this kind of life"? How do we rise above this I, above this shame? Answer: with a good attitude toward people. This shame is designed to make us lose our temper. Question: then tell me, how can I not be ashamed? In difficult situations, what should I do? Answer: you cannot be ashamed only in two cases: either you lose your human appearance and become an animal, that is, "Oh, I don't care. I don't care about anything." In general, when you sort of annihilate everything that is outside of you. When you annul society, the whole environment, then you have no shame. You cancel it, so what are you ashamed of? Or, when you annul yourself in relation to society and say, "I am worth nothing. I am ready to do everything for the sake of society, to belong to the society in everything." My I is nothing, only we exist. And then shame also disappears. This second option is preferable. But there are also higher ones. From CabTV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, February 2, 2020. Ascending to the next level. Question: from which point can I push myself to advance if my desire doesn't want to? Answer: of course you don't want to. It is like asking the Creator to take you back to the starting point of creation in which you were a total zero. Cancel me so I do not exist. It is the most repulsive appeal you can make to the Creator if a person says that he doesn't agree with everything that the Creator has done. It appears in us, naturally, when we despise our life, our attributes, this world, and everything that happens to us. This is a terrible state. We need to ascend above all this a little and see that it is all intentional in order to push us out of this world, so that we will somehow try ascend above it and ask that Creator to raise us, and see all the powers, the attributes, and the negative events that we encounter as opportunities that we are given in order to balance ourselves, and without which we will not be able to advance. These states are crucial so that we can leap above them to the next level and then to the next level, etc. This is how we constantly advance. So don't look at our world as a given state. The Creator distorts it on purpose so that we will ascend to the next level as soon as possible. From CabTV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 16, 2018. Returning from the other world. Question: I came back from dead in the full sense of the word. I experienced clinical death after falling from the 8th floor of a building. I survived. What I saw and felt cannot be expressed in words. It was a sense of peace and love. The kind of love that does not exist. I now understand that it is not terrible to die. It is much worse to live in this world. Can you explain what I saw and why I was brought back to this world? And why do we suffer so much here if it is so good there? Answer: I also experienced clinical death. I also felt this inspiration and this peace. So what? We must still fulfill all the conditions that are given to us, from above, from the highest level of nature. You should not dwell on it too much. You will not understand it now anyway. I am not going to explain it to you either. You must live by the law, that is, to try and stick to the good in spite of everything that nature awakens in you. Comment: what about the fact that a person lives with this memory of how good it was and is no longer afraid to die? This man is no longer afraid. My response: this too is given to him now. It is his destiny to undergo such states. Question: well, you know, there are a lot of TV programs and incredible books that people cannot put down, they become bestsellers. They describe how a person comes back from the other world and how good it was there, a tunnel of light, love, and on and on. Is this all to calm us down? Answer: it has nothing to do with the truth. No connection. Comment: you are breaking people's hearts now. They are holding on to this notion. My response: the main thing is to sweeten this life of yours. They say that life here is not that important as long as there is something waiting for us, later. There will be no Egyptian pyramids, no dancing concubines or whatnot, nothing is awaiting for us, there at all. Question: but you constantly tell us, that if we reach the spiritual world, that it is a state of love, a state of bestowal, a state of peace. When you say that, what do you mean? Answer: the upper world is a state of correct self-assessment. Meaning, it is more like a trial, a very deep psychological evaluation of your feelings, your thoughts, and your actions from the standpoint of truth, which becomes revealed when you break away from the body. After all, what is it about living or dying? It is about giving up your ego. Only then can one see not through his ego, but the true picture of what is happening in the universe. Then a person can see what is called the future world, the upper world. not through the ego. Through the ego, one only sees this world. Question: so you can actually say that gradually, if you let a person break away from egoism, from this body even a little, that he can already experience the states that make such an impression on him? Answer: yes, you can say so. Question: and the truth, is it a billion, many billion times greater than all of this here? Answer: yes. Question: and you are telling us, that man can come to the truth in this life, in this body, in this world? Even to a much greater state than he has felt and is dreamed of? Answer: of course. A billion times greater. This requires a special inner state of man, of his desires, intentions, his strength. Otherwise, it will crush him. Therefore, man is not allowed to experience it until he acquires in this world the screen, the force of resistance to egoism, in order not to trade these special states for something sweet. Then it is given to him. Comment: you are saying that there is such great, incredible love and happiness in store for us, that we have to. My response: be prepared for it. And a person gets prepared for it in this world if he wants to. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, February 2nd, 2020. What do commentaries on the sources give us? Question: why was it necessary after 1,000 years to write a commentary on the Torah? Answer: it is impossible to pass the Torah from mouth to mouth all the time because each generation falls lower and lower. The next generation somehow changes what you pass on to them and partially begins to understand. Question: isn't the information in the Pentateuch enough? Answer: no. The Pentateuch is generally difficult to understand. It is perceived as an historical story and no one understands what is hidden behind it. Only the Kabbalists do. Certainly the Book of Zohar is a full commentary on the Torah. But what a commentary! Does anyone understand what it says? Question: what is the point of this commentary if no one understands it? Answer: it is intended for Kabbalists who can use the Book of Zohar to understand what is written in the Torah. Question: when you read the Book of Zohar, do you understand the Torah better? Answer: of course. And without the Book of Zohar, it is very difficult, there is no connection. The Zohar provides the connection between the Torah and what the Kabbalist attains. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, June 3, 2019. Agreeing with all states. Baal HaSulam, Shemati, 34, The Advantage of a Land: only in this manner can we receive this delight and pleasure. The inability to receive the delight and pleasure that the Creator wants to give evokes in the receiver hatred for separation. We must understand how we approach the Creator and how we connect with Him, because equivalence and similarity of properties, equivalence of form, lies only in the fact that I agree with all the states I am in because all of them come from the Creator. I do not relate to these states as good or bad. I believe that all of them are absolutely identical. It is just that the Creator dangles me from top to bottom and from bottom to top so that I am directed toward Him all the time. And when the change in the state does not affect me in any way, then it is considered that I have acquired the power of faith. And then he can discern the great benefit from equivalence of form, and then he begins to yearn for adhesion. It turns out that every form points to another form. Thus, all the descents where one feels that he has come to separation are an opportunity to discern between something and its opposite. We cannot define any state as good or bad unless we attain it from its opposite. Only in this way: good out of bad, bad out of good. But if we do not feel these differences and if we do not have this delta comma, the difference between the states, then we cannot measure or feel anything. To the same degree that negative and positive emotions are present within a person and he attributes them only to the Creator without attaching good or bad to them, to that degree they will help him to be in unity with the Creator and he will then manage his states correctly. from Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, December 22, 2019. Two systems, Abraham and Nimrod. Kabbalah says that there are two systems inside a person. They exist within us, and must exist in society. But society cannot properly adapt to these systems. Therefore, in the days of ancient Babylon, Nimrod's system developed, capitalistic, and the group system of Abraham, Kabbalistic. In our time, they are beginning to gradually find each other and connect with each other. The fact is that the system of Abraham must be realized in all people, in the general system, according to the principle love your neighbor as yourself. Nimrod's system is decaying, as we find that egoism, if not balanced, is the greatest evil. Therefore, only now, after 3,500 years, they are beginning to converge as we begin to understand that it is necessary to balance both systems. They are balanced in the form of receiving for the sake of bestowal. Receiving is a property of Nimrod, bestowal is a property of Abraham. This is how they should be realized in society today. From Cab TV's Spiritual States, May 13, 2019.